Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Shri Bhakti Vedanta ki.
Jai.
Karanta Raja Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Giri Raj Maharaj ki.
Jai
Nitai Gopreman.
Jai.
Thank you for coming. Hare Krishna. Many great sages have attended. Very good to see you all. So, last night we began chapter 13. We're studying the Varnashram system. So chapter 11 discusses the 30 qualities that every human being should have, regardless of Varna, regardless of Ashram. We should all have 30 very good qualities, which are mentioned in the 11th chapter. Then it discusses a brief synopsis of the different Varnas, especially the Brahminical Varna, or being a Brahmana. Then it discusses the duties of womanhood, being a woman in Krishna consciousness, a Vedic woman. Then it discusses Varna Sankara, or those who are not qualified, who are outside the Vedic system of Varna and Ashram. Then chapter 12 discusses in the very beginning about Brahmacharis, which is one of the Ashrams. And then Varnaprastas for the rest of the chapter, which is another of the ashrams. Last night, we began chapter 13, and we discussed the sannyas ashram. So those of you who did not hear the lecture, who were not here, if you have time, listen to the sannyas ashram. A few questions may be answered in regards to sannyas. Tonight, we'll go from verses 11 to 23, and we will hear Narada instructing Yudhishthira about sannyas. The chapter is still talking about sannyas. Now he gives an analogy of the python. So he discusses the python so that we can understand the way that people should practice, or it gives elaboration on the sannyas ashram by understanding this analogy. So we'll begin the analogy from verses 11 to 23. Thank you, Jamuna. Didn't get it. There. Okay. As a historical example of this, learned sages recite the story of an ancient discussion between Prahlad Maharaj and a great saintly person who was feeding himself like a python. So, Sugadev Prabhu, could you please read?
The saintly person met by Prahlad Maharaj was undergoing Adhigara from the living condition of python, which does not go anywhere but sits in one place for years and eats whatever is automatically available. Prahlad Maharaj, along with his associates, met this great saint and spoke to him as follows.
So, any points? Ajagara.
Prabhupada mentioned several times in the examples when he was asked about traveling outside India using airplane, so that was like the Rasta field also. He used it as a Krishna part.
Yeah, he said we'd go down the hole, the snake will go down the hole and eat the mouse. Yeah. Good. Any other points? Ajagara. Ajagara means python. Vritti. Vritti means like regulation or practice, like that. So, to act like a python. So what is this analogy teaching us? This is an instruction which has been given to the sannyasis, or it's describing the consciousness of the sannyasi. Ultimately, the consciousness of the sannyasi, as we said last night, the sannyasi is the spiritual master of society. So all varnas, all ashrams are dependent upon the sannyasi. The sannyasi is a guru to everyone else. So in ISKCON, our sannyasis, they are our gurus. Generally, most of us are initiated by sannyasis. Usually the sannyasis become the gurus, although we have grihasthas also, or vanaprasthas who are gurus also. But generally, most of the gurus are sannyasis. So the sannyasi, he has a particular type of consciousness. And what is his consciousness? His consciousness is that he is fully dependent upon Krishna. That is actual sannyasi. He's dependent upon Krishna. In other words, he does not depend on his own arrangements. But he depends that Krishna will supply everything for me. So this is similar. Narada is explaining this is similar to the python. The python does not move. He lives in one place, apparently. I don't know much about pythons, if they move around or like that, but according to what is being told here, they live in one place. So they're more or less situated in one tree or one area, and they just wait for the food to come to them. They don't move around, but they wait for it to come to them. So you may have to wait a long time. So a python, they have the ability to not eat for a long time. That's their body, like that. But then when something comes, then they will take it, they will eat it, slowly digest it, and then they will maintain themselves for a long time. So they don't need to move around. Last night we heard that the sannyasi should move around. He should go from village to village constantly. He should not stay in one place. Every day it says he should go to the next village. He shouldn't just stay in one place. But he has to be detached. So basically he has to have the consciousness of the python, even though he's continuously moving. Although it is interesting because we see quite a few of the sannyasis these days are staying in one place. Just like His Holiness Radhanath Swami has really, now he's in America mainly, I think, because his health, I heard that he wasn't going to spend so much time in India for the next few years because he's, India's can be tough on the health for Western people. So, but you see that a lot of the time in the last 10, 20 years he's spent in particular areas, not moving around so much as traditionally as sannyasis do. Personally, I think this is a better system. You can see when the sannyasis do sit in one place, like Shivaram Swami in Hungary, Radhanath Swami in Chalpati in Pune, and those places, you see how much effect it has on the community and how much things... So, I mean, traditionally, they're supposed to travel constantly. But personally, I see that when they do spend time in one place, how much effect they can have. So they have to judge them for themselves, you know, how much it will affect their detachment. The main principle for the sannyasi is he does not become attached to material facility, sense gratification and opulence, bhoga aishwarya. So that is what he has to see. If he's staying in one place, it seems to me, I think it's a very good idea. Not that my opinion means anything, but I think it has very good effect. But obviously they have to see, is it affecting them? Are they becoming attached? But if they're very renounced and living very simply, like you see Radhanath Swami, he lives very simply, as we discussed last night. Shivaram Swami, he was on the internet, I saw 6 months ago or so. He was doing like Kachiyani Vrat. You know, after Kartik, if you read in the Bhagavatam, then the gopis in Vrindavan, during that winter month, they take a vrata, so they get Krishna as a husband. So part of the vrata is they only eat very simply, I think maybe once a day or very, very simply. They only take cold bath. The Kachiyani Vrat means you take a vrat to satisfy Lord Shiva, to satisfy Durga, to get a good husband, like that. So Shivaram Swami, he was doing like that. Yeah, he was eating very simply, not shaving, having cold bath only for a month, because he wanted to get Krishna as his husband. You know, so this is very advanced level, but you know, this is real sannyas, renunciation. Sannyasis are meant to be renounced. They're meant to show us how to perform austerity, like that. But of course, the main austerity is preaching. And you see that, I know my spiritual master, we were with him in France in 1996, and he got into the car and we're driving from New Mayapur to Paris. maybe 3 hours or something. And he got in the car, and it was summertime in France, so it was a little hot. So he got in the car and he said, okay, turn on the AC. And the devotee said, oh, there's no AC in this car. And he said, there's no, you're putting me in a car where there's no AC? He said, I've done austerity for years and years and years. He said, now I just need a little bit of AC just to, you know, just to cool me down. He said, I've done so much austerity for so many years. So it is not that the sannyasis, it's not that they have to do unnecessary austerity or too much austerity. Because the main austerity is preaching. And my spiritual master was going from New Mayapur to Paris to preach. So that was the austerity. You know, so not that he has to, you know, sit in a hot car for 3 hours on top of that. He said when he was young, they used to do so much austerity like that. So the point is that the sannyasi must be dependent upon Krishna. Just like a python, right? A python is dependent upon Krishna. So even though the sannyasi may be moving around or he may be in one place, but he depends on Krishna. He doesn't make his own arrangements materially. He doesn't accumulate material comforts or material objects or acquisition. He doesn't continuously collect things just to make his life comfortable. He renounces bhoga and aishwarya. And what is the other feature that we'll see of the python in this example? You'll see when we study, because Prahlad Maharaj is about to go on tour, so he meets this particular brahmana or this particular saint. So this brahmana or saint, what is his mentality? His mentality is that he wants to become completely uninvolved in material affairs. And that is what sannyas is about. Sannyas is about becoming uninvolved in material affairs. They're not interested in material life. We discussed this last night. A sannyasi does not, it is not his business to know what is going on in the Grihastha ashram. That's why we discussed this last night also. The sannyasis, you know, the Grihastha should not go to the sannyasis to solve their marital problems or their Griha problems. You go to the sannyasi for spiritual advice or spiritual inspiration. You don't go and discuss all your problems with your wife or your children or whatever. It's not for the sannyasi to deal with. It's for the senior Grihasthas to deal with. They can deal with these things. But the sannyasi, it's not their business. So the sannyasi, he wants to become uninvolved. So you'll see in this example of this particular saint, Sadhu, who is the Brahmin, who is taking this vow of being like a python, he's just uninvolved in the material world. He's not getting involved. And that's what it means to be a sannyasi. The sannyasi should be uninvolved. They only interface with the material energy for one reason. And that is to preach Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, they're not interested. And material energy, it's crazy, this place. Yeah. Hands up if you know what I'm talking about tonight. It's just crazy. The whole thing's crazy. You know, I'm listening to the news tonight when I'm, you know, I went to play some tennis with Prabhu Charan, and then I was driving back, so I was listening to the news, and just garbage. You know, the whole thing's just the election, and who really cares? You know? And devotees, a few devotees have been asking me, who should we vote for? On Saturday, you have to vote, most of you, like that. So, basically, you have two choices, I think. One is that you just, I think there's a box you tick where you just say, I don't really care. Or maybe you can write that, I don't really care, and tick the box, like that. And you don't vote for anyone. I think there's a box where you can do that. Or if you're going to vote for someone, probably vote for the Greens Party. Because they've got a little bit of sanity. Although, not all of it, we don't agree with all of their policies. But some of their policies are actually good, like that. But the other two parties, it's really, it's just crazy stuff. You know, they're going to make a mess. And it looks like this guy is about to get in. He's actually quite a pious guy in some ways for a Kali Yuga standard. He's going to make a mess of things, unfortunately, because they don't understand what to do. So, basically, a sannyasi, he just doesn't get involved in these things. He only gets involved in the material energy to preach. and to spread Krishna consciousness to others, but he has no interest in the material energy. So we see in this example of the python, this sadhu, he has no interest in getting involved in the material world. So he's just acting like a python. He's just sitting back like that. So we can learn these things, even though we're not sannyasis. Even though last night we said that Prabhupada said the grihasthas, if they're fully surrendered to Krishna, they are sannyasis. So we can learn these general principles, that we should become uninvolved in the material world as much as possible. Any points? Prahlad Maharaj, the most dear servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, once went out touring the universe with some of his confidential associates just to study the nature of saintly persons. Thus he arrived on the bank of the Kaveri, where there was a mountain known as Saya. There he found a great saintly person who was lying on the ground, covered with dirt and dust, but who was deeply spiritually advanced. So Prahlad Maharaj is teaching us the purpose of going on pilgrimage. What is the purpose of going on pilgrimage? To find saintly people. Bhagavatam says, if you go to a holy place but you don't find saintly people, you're going there like a cow or a ass or a buffalo, like that. You just go there, you take a bath in a holy water. But what's the point of bathing in a holy water if you don't get the association of the saintly people? So that is why we go on pilgrimage, because the saintly people will be in the holy places. So you go there, but you have to find them, and you have to associate with them. So Prahlad Maharaj is teaching us this is why we go on pilgrimage. So he's taken some confidential devotees, some like-minded devotees who are serious about Krishna consciousness, and he said, let us go and find some saintly people. So they're traveling around trying to meet the saintly people. Now he's met this saintly person who externally appears very dirty. But the Bhagavatam says he is spiritually very advanced. So this is something we have to learn, and Prabhupada will discuss this in the next few verses. We have to learn how to understand who is advanced and who is not advanced. You can't judge things externally. Sometimes we judge externally. Right? And we think, oh, you know, that person's not so advanced, or that person's not so advanced. But we have to learn to understand who is advanced, and then get their association. You can't judge externally these things. Just like there's one Prabhupada disciple here at the moment, Prem Kishore Prabhu. He's a very, very advanced devotee, very advanced Vaishnava. Lives in Vrindavan for the last 7 years. Right? Gets up at 2 o'clock every morning, milks his cow every morning, and now he manages the MVT on top of that. He has 2 acres of land next to our Goshala in Vrindavan, and he grows sabji and like that, grows his own organic vegetables. And he told me that he wants to make everything in the MVT, the big restaurant we have there in Vrindavan, everything organic. Very inspirational devotee, very nice devotee. I didn't even know who he was. I've never met him before. Didn't even know he existed. And when I first went up to him, I said, oh, Prabhu, who are you? And, you know, I just thought I was just another devotee. But as soon as he began to speak, I realized he's actually a very advanced soul. So we should get association of these devotees. Naveen and Narada Prabhu was just here. Did you hear his class this morning? Yeah. His class. he went for a japa walk this morning, 5 o'clock on Beaconsfield Parade. And he was walking along, and one guy walked out of his house about 6:30 in the morning to get into his BMW, just down there in Beaconsfield Parade. Walks out of his big apartment house, walks out. So, I mean, he's on a japa walk. He's always got books on him. Always got books. He's one of the biggest books. Like, there's a good chance he's distributed more Prabhupada's books than anyone else on the planet. There's a good chance. He's definitely up there in the top percentage. He's distributed unlimited books. You know, he used to distribute 600 books a day, hardback, on the street, in marathons. You know, very powerful. So 6 o'clock in the morning, he's walking down here, Beaconsfield, chanting his japa. This guy comes out, and he walks up to him, just about to get into his BMW, and he goes up, he said, oh, is that a sports car? You know, you've got to go in book distribution with him. He's hilarious, you know. He acts completely stupid, and then people get really, like, into it. So he says, is this a sports car? Of course, it's a BMW. Everyone knows it's a sports car. The guy goes, yeah, it's a sports car. Yeah, he starts talking about his car, you know. And the man's going, wow. He doesn't care about his car. You know, he's just saying. And then he says, you know, what do you do for a living? And he said, I manage Goodyear tyres. You know, one of the tyre, I don't know, some manager in Goodyear tyres. And then the man go, wow, have you got Goodyear tyres on this car? And the guy's going, yeah, these are the best tyres, you know. He's talking about tyres. I mean, he doesn't care anything about tyres. So he gives him a book. The guy likes him now, and he's a friend. So he gives him a book, one of Prabhupada's, but just a little book, you know. And the guy gave $5. And this is even before greeting the deities. He's already distributed the book, you know, down the beach operate. So these aren't ordinary devotees. You know, these are like Sankirtan warriors. These are Lord Chaitanya's, you know, I wouldn't say like personal associates, but they're not ordinary souls. You know, no one goes out distributing books at 5 o'clock in the morning, Beacon's Field Parade, but Navina does. Now, he's incredible. Like last year, Rupa Raghunath was telling me that he was in America. They had a rock concert. You know, like in Australia, we have Big Day Out. You know, this concert we have, Big Day Out. So it goes from Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide, Perth. Like travels like that. So they had a rock concert in America, which went to 50 states in 52 days or something. It's like choom, 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 state to state. So Navina did every single concert. Didn't have a day off for 52 days, which is a month and a half. Every single concert. And he was distributing at least $1,000 of Prabhupada's books every day. For, you know, it's not ordinary devotees. This level of tapasya is not like ordinary. You know, so you have to learn to understand who are the advanced devotees and associate with them. They're not ordinary, these people. In the Venus tapasya, the amount of tapasya he's done is incredible. Incredible amount of tapasya. He took a vow, this is back in the 90s, he took a vow to go out on book distribution every day for 1 year. He took a vow. I'll go out and book distribution every day for 1 year. And he did it. It's incredible tapasya. Imagine how dear he must be to Prabhupada for doing this service. So we have to find these devotees. So Prahlad Maharaj is walking around. You know, where are the advanced devotees? He's looking for the advanced devotees. So he can associate with them. So, any points? No, you can't copy them, but you can follow them. We can't distribute as many books as them, but we can, at least we can distribute some books.
Bit hard.
Yeah, maybe. But you just have to try.
I give them free.
You can ask for some donation as well. That's nice. You can try. The point is you can try. That's the point. You can try. Just like Gaurav was telling me yesterday, he has his jewelry shop down there in Brighton. One devotee, just down there. So he has Prabhupada's books in the shop, because some people, they come in to order jewelry and they have to sit down for a few minutes. So he has Back to Godhead on the table, so people can, and people sit down, they read Back to Godhead. And then he has a few higher taste and things there. And if he sees they're reading the books, then after they buy the jewelry, he says, oh, you know, he explains a little bit. He says, oh, why don't you give a donation for this? He says, people, they take the books. So you just have to think of ways to distribute. And he says that every single person who comes in his shop, they give him some prasadam. Every person who comes in, they give them cookie or some prasad. So we just have to think of ways to distribute the books. If you're bold, then Krishna will help you. Just think like that. Like Navina said in the class today, one book a day keeps Myra away. So you just think every day I'll just do one book to one person. Like that. It can be done. If you have that focus, you can do it. You know, these things are not impossible. And imagine if all of us distributed one book every day. That's like, you know, 30 books every day. Book distribution goes right up. Like that. So just if we have the desire, it will happen. And Naveen has already distributed books, you know, 5 o'clock this morning, he's already out on book distribution. Like that. So if we have the desire, we can spread Krishna consciousness. One time Prabhupada gave a book to one politician, I think it was in Vrindavan, and then he said, because he could see, sometimes he would give the books for free, sometimes he would give a book, you know, and just say, this is a gift for you. But then he gave to the politician, but the politician he could see wasn't so interested. So Prabhupada said, you know, this is Bhagavad Gita I've written and it's, you know, selling all around the world. And then he said, can you give a donation? And the man said, no, I won't give a donation. So Prabhupada took the book back. And he just took the book back. So Prabhupada liked us to get donations for his books, not just give them out for free, but get donations. And then people will read them. If they give money, they will read them. Okay. Neither by that saintly person's activities, by his bodily features, by his words, nor by the symptoms of his varnashram status, could people understand whether he was the same person they had known.
The inhabitants of that particular place on the bank of Kaveri, in the valley of Mountain Nor and Pagya, were unable to understand whether that saint was the same man they had known. It's therefore said, Vaishnavera Kriya Mutra Vijnena Mushkaya. A highly advanced Vaishnava lives in such a way that no one can understand what he is or what he was. No such attempts be made to understand the past of a Vaishnava. Without asking the saintly person about his previous life, Prahlad Maharaj immediately offered him respectful obeisances.
So what are the points here?
Same was Prabhupada's course when we were studying Narad Muni's example, how Narad Muni took Kaya Dhamur in his ashram. And there in the purport it was written that we should not doubt that Narad Muni was working with the young woman in the ashram. And there Prabhupada's course his work and there. But no one can understand the activities of a Vaishnava, so don't try to imitate the following of his steps. We had an essay at the time, so we should not try to imitate the activities of a Vaishnava because we cannot understand.
Yeah, good point. I've got all the exams, but I'll let them upstairs. So just remind me at the end of class, I'll run up quickly and I'll grab them. And then, Janeshwari, you want to go? You know the sannyasi room? Just go in the sannyasi room, just on the couch. All the exams are there. Just bring them down. Yeah, it's over. Just go. Yeah. Hiranyakashipu's wife was in his ashram. So Prabhupada quotes this same verse that you can't understand the mind of a Vaishnava.
Not just judging Vaishnavas, but a good idea not to judge the activities or characters of anybody because we are imperfect. There will always be a wrong conclusion. It's a good idea not to judge.
Yeah, it's a good idea not to be too judgmental too quickly. But Prabhupada makes another comment as we get a bit further in. So, any other points? Yeah, and Prabhupada makes a comment about this too in the next few verses also. So we understand someone's consciousness when they begin to speak and when they begin to act. So what does Krishna say? Oh, Arjuna says near the end of the second chapter of the Gita, he says, how do I understand who is advanced? Who is a transcendentalist? How does he speak? How does he act? What is his speech? And how does he walk? Like that. So he asks these questions. And then Krishna finishes the second chapter of the Gita answering how we can understand a transcendentalist. And Prabhupada says the most important feature when we're trying to understand how advanced someone is, he says, is when they open their mouth and they speak. Because as soon as someone opens their mouth, Prabhupada says, a fool remains hidden as long as he does not open his mouth. As soon as someone speaks, you know where they are at. You understand, is this person advanced or is this person materialistic in consciousness? So when you study someone according to their behavior, how they act, and how they speak, then we can understand if someone is materialistic in their consciousness or spiritual in their consciousness. Just put it up there. Thank you. So then we can understand, this is how we understand, right? Who is advanced, who is not advanced, because we don't know what's going on in the mind. But as soon as you just watch someone, right, and you see their behavior, how they deal with other people, then you'll understand. Are they materialistic? Are they advanced? Are they self-centered? Are they selfless? And then when they speak, it becomes even more obvious. So this is how we understand. So just by seeing this person, Prahlad can understand he's very advanced. Like that. But especially when he begins to speak and how he behaves, then you can really understand. Like that. So then, Prabhupada makes an important point, and this is brought up in the Harinam Chintamani by Haridas Thakur. He says that you should not judge a devotee for his activities before he became a devotee. Right? You can't say, you know, this devotee was like this before they took to Krishna consciousness. In other words, Haridas Thakur says in the Harinam Chintamani, I didn't have the Harinam Chintamani with me, so I couldn't look up the exact list. There's about four items. You may remember some of them. But he says, you can't judge someone according to their birth. You say, oh, that person was born in the West. You know, only Indian gurus are bona fide. You know, Western gurus are not bona fide. Or sometimes you hear these kind of things. So Haridas Thakur says, you can't judge someone based on the way they were born, or activities they performed before they became a devotee. Because many of us broke the regulative principles before we came to Krishna consciousness. Right? Some of us ate meat, we had illicit sex, we took intoxication, we gambled. You know, we did these things. You know, practically, Western devotees, before we became devotees, we did all these things. That's what we did. Because we didn't know any better. But now someone's a devotee, you can't judge them. You can't say, oh, they used to be like that. That's actually an aparad, it's actually an offense. Improper. So you can't discriminate against someone or criticize someone because of their past. And actually Prabhupada says in this section, he said the past does not matter for a devotee. Once you are initiated or once you take the Krishna consciousness, it's like a new birth. The Vedas say it is dvija. Dvija means you are twice born. Second birth. So what happened before you're a devotee, that is not so important. Right? What is important is now you're a devotee. So then we see what is the quality of the devotee. Like that. And, as Prabhupada is emphasizing here, we should offer respect to Vaishnavas. So what does Prahlad Maharaj do? He sees this saintly personality. Immediately he begins to respect him. So when we meet another devotee, we should offer respect. That is Vaishnava Sadacha, or etiquette. If you meet another devotee, you must offer respect according to that devotee's status. Right? If you meet someone who is equal to you, all right, or greater than you, you should offer obeisances to that devotee. If someone is junior, right, then you offer respect in the mind. Like that. So that is the system. Like that. So you see, as soon as Prahlad Maharaj sees the saintly person, he begins to worship him and offer respect. He bows down before him. This is Prahlad Maharaj. Yeah, Prahlad Maharaj is a Mahajana. He's one of the 12 Mahajanas. But he offers respect when he sees this saintly person. So, any points?
Previous canto, we listened that King Ravana could not 1695, the Jarrah. So though he was, so when he starts speaking, first he was asking him. Then once he understands, then he starts respecting him. So one has to be at a chair at place to, because here he can understand Kalama, the Mahajan, so he is able to identify. So he wants, or thinking that one understands, one has to understand how others advance. Otherwise, we are going to be either speculating or we are just doing it unnaturally.
Yeah, Prabhupada discusses this in the next few verses, so we'll answer it, or we'll discuss it more when Prabhupada brings it up. But the basic principle is you should just offer respect to all the Vaishnavas. Then you're not going to make any mistakes. In general, yeah. Just offer respect. Just be humble and be respectful.
And the second question is, you mentioned about the past year. Now, in terms of preaching also, I've heard from many senior Vaishnavas, and sometimes we do, that we try to explain or say about our past. Like how you said that we also brought our political principles, we told it some duties. So, to what extent is good, because the recipient may not be the devotee. We are speaking that to the devotee, for example, if Bhagavatam, even if Bhagavatam is speaking, and how the devotees can understand, because they can they understand the letter of the preacher. But to what extent that should be conveyed? If you say about past life, then others can reach church and either they can comment up themselves or they may not even understand the subject. To what extent we can look at our previous.
What we did before we became devotees?
Yes.
You just have to see. In terms of when you're preaching and presenting Krishna consciousness, if there's examples that you can use them, I suppose.
Yes. I mean, is it good to read?
You just have to watch the audience. Like I'm giving class now, so I'm looking at everyone. So I can see, you know, sometimes when you're speaking, everyone just starts kind of going like, you know. So then it means obviously they're not that interested in what you're saying. So they immediately going to start changing what you're saying or become more dynamic in your presentation, or there's obviously something wrong. So when you're presenting Krishna consciousness, and then you have to watch the audience, what's the effect? If you're speaking and you can perceive that they're having trouble with what you're saying, then start saying something differently. Like that. So you can, I mean, we all use examples from before we became devotees, but you just have to see how effective it is. So just means if you're an expert preacher, you'll be. See, someone who's not a very good preacher, they say what they want to say. The audience may be completely bored. Yeah, everyone might be asleep. I've seen classes where half the devotees are actually asleep. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't give class if people were asleep. What's the point? I mean, for a start, you shouldn't be giving class. You know, if you can't say something and keep people awake, then you probably shouldn't even be giving class. Right? And the audience have to try harder, that's obvious, but. So you have to be sensitive to what's taking place in your audience. It's not about what you want to say, it's about what they need to hear. That's the point. You know, sometimes an advanced devotee, he knows very advanced, he has very advanced realizations, but he doesn't speak them to the audience because the audience aren't ready to hear that. He has to speak what the audience needs to hear. Just like today we had a school group here. You know, they came from Hawthorne Grammar. They were here, so Swarup Shakti was giving a presentation to them. So you have to see, okay, now you've got a group of school kids, so you have to speak relevant to them, right? And now I'm speaking in a Bhaktivedanta course, so now you speak relevant to them. And then if I go to Urban Yoga, you speak in a different way. So a preacher has to be expert, he has to know time, place, circumstance, how to speak. Is that okay?
Do you have the experience from the second question? Wherein in our Bhakti Raksha 2 years back, somebody was attending, and then I ended up talking about my past. So, and we thought that we had a relationship with them, only to realize later on that we didn't have, and we made that mistake. So, and sometimes when we say this, in the early days we also used to go out and, you know, have drinks, alcohol. And then sometime later, the devotee went and told somebody else. Eventually he went out of our program, but he went and told somebody else, Jagannath Rath can say all those things, because when he was my age, he already did all that. Now he can talk all these things. So he doesn't understand that I am going through either. At my age, he also did all this. So then, and that's why probably Ganesh, I don't know that you also experienced this, but sometimes people misuse whatever you tell them, because you sometimes want to connect to them. So you say that, because they think that devotional life is beyond them. Because it's very impossible to overcome all these things. They think like that. Therefore, you tell them that I was also doing all these things, and then I could give up. So I'm sure that you will also give up. This process has enabled us. But then instead of taking it the other way, they take it this way, saying that you enjoy it, so let me not set this back. So there has to be a fine balance. I think Yaman is one day you told me something where I don't know if Radhanath Maharaj or someone said, don't open out your hearts to everyone. Something like that. Can you remind me what that was? She actually instructed me about it. You have to know the audience, and you have to know what relationship you have with that person, and depending on that relationship, then you open out your heart to that person. So that the person doesn't take advantage just because you opened out your heart and said something.
Yeah, it's just
the preaching method has to be there.
Yeah. I mean, I know sometimes I say something in class, and then I look at everyone's face, and they're all looking at me like that. So then I think, okay, now I'll change my direction I'm going, because this is not, they're not into this, or this is just too, they're not relating to this. Or so you just have to be sensitive, that's all. You can't say there's one formula for all situations. Because I can, in particular cases, I can speak to people about things I did before I came to Krishna consciousness. And it's very beneficial for the audience to hear that. And then other times you say the same things to another group, and it, as Jagannath Mahaprabhu says, it has a totally negative effect. So you just have to be sensitive.
Most of the times, in Krishna consciousness, it's better to keep Krishna consciousness realization. More effective.
So it also depends.
In Bhakturiksha, I never bring my past. I mean, this is from my point of view, this is my life. So, all realization, just connecting with what I go through. Most of the things comes of what we go through here, what I learned from Bhagavatam, and then Bhakti Shastri. So, give all those realizations, because it tends to go more effect.
Sure. So, if you feel like that's the most positive thing to say, then stick on that track. If that's working, then do that. I know for myself, if I'm preaching to Western people, and I speak about what I did before as a devotee, and then say, I did that, but now it's much better doing this, it has a good effect.
Transformation.
Yeah, they don't go and say, I can't believe you did that. And it's like, they actually say, I'm also doing that, you did that. So it actually works positively. But then maybe in your Bhakti Vriksha group, maybe it's not such a good thing. So you just have to judge according to the audience. There's nothing definite.
Because you mentioned, the preaching means realization.
Realization, and it means
not seeing knowledge.
Yeah, like that. And being sensitive to the audience. Just like one time, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, this is before he was a sannyasi, this is like 1968, was it 60? Yeah, very early, 68, 69. Like that, very early in the movement. So Prabhupada asked him to have prasad with him. He's only a new devotee, like 1 or 2 years devotee. And Prabhupada said, come and have lunch. So they were having lunch together. So he was, Tamal Krishna Maharaj was brand new. So he's watching Prabhupada very carefully. What he was eating, which order he was eating. So he was copying everything Prabhupada was doing. And then after some time, he said to Prabhupada, is there a particular order or a particular way to do it? And Prabhupada said, when you're taking prasad, there are no hard and fast rules. You can eat whatever you want. You just want to put jalebi in your mouth, then just put jalebi in your mouth. And then whatever you want to do, like that. So when you're preaching, there's not really hard and fast rules. You just have to see what is working. If it's working, then you do it. Okay. The advanced devotee, Prahlad Maharaj, duly worshipped and offered obeisances to the saintly person, who had adopted a python's means of livelihood. After thus worshipping the saintly person and touching his own head to the saint's lotus feet, Prahlad Maharaj, in order to understand him, inquired very submissively as follows. Seeing the saintly person to be quite fat, Prahlad Maharaj said, "My dear sir, you undergo no endeavor to earn your livelihood, but you have a stout body, exactly like that of a materialistic enjoyer. I know that if one is very rich and has nothing to do, he becomes extremely fat by eating and sleeping and performing no work." Jagannath Ramprabhu, please read the purport. You're very amused by this.
Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did not like his disciples to become very fat in the course of time. He would become very anxious upon seeing his fat disciples becoming bogies or enjoyers of the senses. This attitude is herewith confirmed by Prahlad Maharaj, who was surprised to see a saintly person adopting ajagarvritti and becoming very fat. In the material world also, we generally see that when a man who is poor and skinny gradually endeavors to earn money through business or some other means, and he then gets the money, he enjoys the senses with satisfaction. By enjoying the senses, one becomes fat. Therefore, in spiritual advancement, becoming fat is not at all satisfactory.
Any comments? Any points of interest to you? I should have got you to read the purple. Or a skinny one. Any other points?
There is a saying in our language that one is a yogi, and one who is twice is a bodhi, and the one who is thrice is a roli. The one who is four times, you just have to pack him up. And then the rhyme is just for Kondo, he means just pack him up in the four, so the four people can carry him. Because he is four times. So one has to learn to be yogi. It's a proverb.
From his village. So Rupa Goswami says, Achahara, Priyashasya. So Achahara means do not overeat. Only eat as much as necessary. Prabhupada said, in Krishna consciousness, we should eat sumptuously. Sumptuously means you need to eat as much as you need to do your service properly. Prabhupada said we should be sensually strong, physically and mentally strong. So you need to eat enough. Prabhupada didn't like his devotees under-eating. Hari Sori Prabhu went to Vrindavan to see Prabhupada in 1977, and he had been serving Prabhupada for 15 months up until January 1977, and then he left and he came back in May. And he'd been in Australia for 4 months. And he was in the GBC, Prabhupada met in the GBC. So then he came back, all the GBCs were called in May to go back to Vrindavan because Prabhupada was ill. And when he got back, he'd only been eating once a day. And when Prabhupada saw him, he'd lost weight from only eating once a day. So when Prabhupada saw him, he said, "You are reducing?" And Prabhupada was concerned, "You are reducing?" And he said, "Oh, Prabhupada, I've only been eating once a day." And Prabhupada said, "That is not very good. You should eat more than that." And but then he said, "But Prabhupada, I read in your books, you should only, it's good for spiritual life if you only eat once a day." And Prabhupada said, "Oh, but that is okay." Not that. So the point is that we should reduce our eating as much as possible or practical so that we can do our service. Because if you eat too much, you will sleep too much. Right? If you eat too much, you'll be disturbed by sex desire. So we have to look at our eating. But at the same time, if we eat too less, then we'll become weak in our body, sick, and in our mind also we'll become weak. And the intelligence also becomes affected. Yeah? You try to have a rational conversation with someone who's hungry. Right? If I haven't eaten, and then you try to have like a conversation, I'm just like, I don't want to talk right now. I just want to eat something, you know, like that. So we need to, because the intelligence becomes affected. And actually, you can get diseases. If you overeat or undereat, you'll get diseases. And one devotee, he passed away in Mayapur not long ago, maybe about 3 years ago or something. He was not eating very, he was eating very less. And he got, I can't remember what it was.
Anorexia?
No, yeah, I mean you get anorexia, but I think it was tuberculosis or something. Prabhupada actually makes a statement, if you undereat, you'll get certain diseases, and if you overeat, you'll get other diseases. So we have to have the right amount. So Prabhupada wanted us to eat well, but Prabhupada also did not want us to eat rich food. Rich food, you can only eat rich food if you're working very hard. Just like at the farm, we have wood chops every 6 months. So we invite, you know, like 5 or 10 devotees come down and help chop the wood. We work really hard. So we cook lasagna and everything because devotees are coming working hard. So we cook like, you know, nice, rich prasada and everyone eats. But then they go out and work so hard, you just burn everything. Prabhupada says, if you work hard, you can digest rocks. But we're eating, most of the day we're eating rich food, but we don't do anything. We just sit behind a computer and like that. So it's not a good system. You should eat light, healthy prasada. Like Prabhupada did, rice dal, sabji chapati. Good standard prasada like that. Any points?
Quality rather than quantity.
Quality rather than quantity.
Having balanced healthy diet. And knowing what to eat during different seasons. I think knowledge is good.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, at the moment at the farm, we're growing. Last couple of months, I've only been eating, when I'm at the farm, I'm only eating what's grown on the farm. So at the moment we have pumpkin, which we grew in summer, so we've got it stored, so we're using the pumpkin. We have a lot of carrots at the moment, a lot of broccoli, and silver beet at the moment. So basically that's all we're eating. Every sabji, every like that. It's just so nectar, it's so nice, just eating organic. You know, we're just going, cut the broccoli fresh, bring it in, chop it up, put it in the pot, and then offer it to Krishna and then take. And it's so healthy. So we brought some broccoli to the temple, and Jagannath Balabhaprabhu, he cuts up all the broccoli. You see him, he's always out there cutting up broccoli. And then I said to him, you know, how is the broccoli? And he said, so much better than this broccoli we're buying from the local market, because that's not organic, whereas ours is organic, biodynamic, like that. He said, just by cutting it, he said, I can see the other broccoli is very hard, but this broccoli is very soft. He said, like the stem and everything is very soft. But he said, what if they must be putting a lot of hard chemicals or something into the soil or whatever. They're growing the other. He said, it's very different. So if you eat this organic food, especially when you all come and live at the farm, then you will have this natural organic food. Prabhupada said, this is real opulence. Real opulence is eating organic food. That's actually opulence. And this will be a big issue in the world in the next, who knows how many years. You'll see food prices are just going at the moment. And you'll see in our lifetime, we'll see food will become a major concern for people just to get food. You know, prices are just going to go up and up and up. And the quality of the food is becoming less and less and less at the moment. Any other points?
Do you pray for the caterpillars?
What is that?
Do you pray for the caterpillars?
No, we don't use spray.
Because we buy it and sometimes they eat caterpillars.
On the
broccoli.
Yeah, sometimes you get it. Yeah, we don't have big problem. The main problem we have at the farm is birds.
Mm-hmm.
They come. When the broccoli is very small, the cockatoos come and they eat it. And then they just throw it on the ground. They don't even eat it. They just kind of chew it, throw it on the ground, and the broccoli doesn't grow. So our main problem is the birds. That's the problem. I was speaking to Prem Kishore Prabhu because he grows his own food in Vrindavan. He said the main problem in Vrindavan is the monkeys. They jump the fence and they chew it. Same thing. They just chew everything and just run off. Like that. So there's the problem. Biggest problem when you're farming is the other living entities, Adi Baltica. Everyone wants to eat. or just annoy you.
Can you buy some vegetables?
Yeah, we could arrange it. We could arrange it. We haven't really got it. We haven't got the system. We just haven't got enough manpower. That's the problem. Because all of you city people are attached to your computers and your things. So if we had more devotees, then we could have a good system. We could grow a lot more, and then we could supply it. And we could have an organized system where, you know, devotees can buy it on a weekly basis. And at the moment, we haven't got that. We just haven't got it together yet, just because of manpower constraints. This month at the farm, we've got 3 retreats in September. So it's hard for me to organize, you know, getting organic produce up to the temple and everything like that, to do it properly. I mean, we come and drop it, just drop it in the cool room, but to organize the system, it takes a little bit of manpower and so forth. Maybe in the future we can do it. Okay, so we'll keep going. O Brahmana, fully in knowledge of transcendence, you have nothing to do, and therefore you are lying down. It is also understood that you have no money for sense enjoyment. How then has your body become so fat? Under the circumstances, if you do not consider my question impudent, kindly explain to me how this has happened. Jogeshwara Govindapur.
Generally, those engaged in spiritual advancement take food only once, either in the afternoon or in the evening. If one takes food only once, naturally it does not become fat. The learned sage, however, was quite fat. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj was very much surprised. Because of being experienced in self-realization, a transcendent Buddhist certainly becomes bright-faced, and one who is advanced in self-realization may be considered to possess the body of a Brahmin. Because of the bright-faced, saintly person was lying down and not working, and yet was quite fat, Prahlad Maharaj was puzzled and wanted to question him about this.
So it's the same point that Prabhupada is making. Prabhupada said, basically, people should eat as little as possible. Keeping ourselves healthy. Thanks, Tom.
Anyone know?
Did anyone know it's my birthday?
Birthday.
I forgot. How did you find out?
Well, I'm brave.
Okay. Thanks, Tom.
For the first time, Tom, wish it to you.
Yeah. Especially in the middle of my class. Thank you. Thank you so much. So, at the end of the class. Thank you. One day. What is the point I was making? Yeah, Prabhupada said that devotees should eat as less as possible, but they should be healthy. Now, he said for an old person, it is good to eat, undereat. He said for a young person, it is good to overeat. Just like if the kids overeat, Prabhupada said that's a good mistake, because their body will just metabolize like that. Just like one time I was at the Gurukul in Vrindavan, and Atanu Prabhu, he was one of the Gurukul teachers at that time, he cooked a pizza feast for the boys. And they're all like a little bit older than you guys, probably like about 7 or 8 years old, like that. And these guys, they stacked their pizzas on top of each other, like the slices. And these kids, I mean, they're like, you know, little kids. And they must have eaten like, you know, 7, 8, 10 pieces of pizza. And I can eat 7, 8, 10 back then. You know, and they were eating as much as me. Like these little kids. You know, they're just like, boom, boom, just putting these pizzas down. And then they all went and took rest. We had the feast about 7 o'clock at night. Everyone went and took rest. And then they all got off for Mangalati. You know, and they just went to Mangalati. You know, just boom, like that. So Prabhupada said for a young person to eat too much is a good mistake. He said for an old person to eat too little, that is also a good mistake. As you get older, you have to reduce. Otherwise, your body has problems like that. So naturally, we have to reduce over time. Okay. Your Honor appears learned, expert, and intelligent in every way. You can speak very well, saying things that are pleasing to the heart. You see that people in general are engaged in fruitive activities, yet you are lying here, inactive. Jamunajiva.
Prahlad Maharaj studied the bodily features of the saintly person, and through the saint's physiognomy, Prahlad Maharaj could understand that he was intelligent and expert. Although he was lying down and not doing anything, Prahlada was naturally inquisitive about why he was lying there inactive.
So, devotees are only inactive if they're very advanced in Krishna consciousness or if they're extremely lazy. You see, most devotees are active by nature, and Prabhupada wanted us to be active in Krishna consciousness. Devotees don't like to waste time. Srila Rupa Goswami says in the Nectar of Devotion, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he said there are 9 symptoms of bhava bhakti, which means advanced devotional service. One of the symptoms of an advanced devotee is he does not like to waste time. You see, advanced devotees, they don't waste time. Srila Prabhupada did not waste time like that. So the fact that this particular brahmana is inactive, he's not actively engaged in Krishna's, apparently, like externally actively engaged, this means he's extremely advanced. He's on another level. Like it's very high level of Krishna consciousness. Generally, we don't see devotees like that. Devotees should always be active in Krishna service. Either they're doing sadhana or they're doing service or preaching. They're always engaged like that. Okay. Narad Muni continued, when the saintly person was thus questioned by Prahlad Maharaj, the king of the Daityas, he was captivated by the shower of nectarian words, and he replied to the inquisitiveness of Prahlad Maharaj with a smiling face. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says in his comment on this verse, he says that devotees are very expert at speaking sweetly. Devotees and Krishna, this is a symptom of Krishna and this is a symptom of the devotees. One of Krishna's qualities is that he speaks very sweetly. And you see that devotees, they also speak very sweetly. And the more advanced someone comes, the more sweet they speak. It describes, if you read about the character of Lord Nityananda Prabhu, it says that he always speaks very sweetly. He captivates whoever he speaks to. So when someone becomes more advanced in Krishna consciousness, that's what their speech becomes like. It becomes very sweet, very nectarian. Even when you're being chastised by an advanced devotee, it's very nectarian. Because whatever comes from their mouth is very sweet. The saintly brahmana said, O best of the asuras, Prahlad Maharaj, who are recognized by advanced and civilized men, You are aware of the different stages of life because of your inherent transcendental eyes, with which you can see a man's character and thus know clearly the results of acceptance and rejection of things as they are. So a devotee is known as, if you look at the 26 qualities of a devotee in Sanatana Shiksha that Lord Chaitanya teaches to Sanatana Goswami, one of the 26 qualities of a devotee is daksha. Daksha means expert. So a devotee is expert. An advanced devotee, he can judge a person's character very easily. He just meets someone and very quickly he can ascertain what this person is like. And you see that Srila Prabhupada, he had this quality. He could very quickly and very easily ascertain what someone was actually like. How advanced they were, whether they were materialist, whether they were spiritualist. So as you become purified in Krishna consciousness, you become more expert like this. Very quickly you can understand. This is a good person, this is not such a good person. We have to understand these things. We should not be sentimental. Majjhamadikaris are not sentimental. Some people we have to reject their association. If people are offensive to the Vaishnavas, we have to reject them for their own good. So devotees have to learn how to judge people But not in a materialistic way, but just in a... they have to become expert in ascertaining someone's position very quickly, so they can learn how to deal with people appropriately. Okay. Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is full of all opulences, is predominant within the core of your heart because of your being a pure devotee. He always drives away all the darkness of ignorance, as the sun drives away the darkness of the universe. So Prabhupada explains that when you practice Krishna consciousness, Krishna gives you the intelligence to understand all of these things. As Krishna says in the Chatur Sloki, Tesham Satata Yukdanam, Bhajatam Priti Purvakam, Dadami Buddhi Yogam. Buddhi. Buddhi means Krishna gives you intelligence. Right? The more you practice Krishna consciousness, the more Krishna gives you intelligence or understanding how to ascertain all of these things. So it's not that a devotee likes to judge people, but he just becomes expert in how to understand people's positions. Okay, final verse. My dear King, although you know everything, you have posed some questions, which I shall try to answer according to what I have learned by hearing from authorities. I cannot remain silent in this regard, for a person like you is just fit to be spoken to by one who desires self-purification.
Janishwar,
you can read the purport.
The saintly person doesn't wish to speak to anyone and everyone, and he is therefore grave and silent. Generally, common man does not need to be advised. Unless one is prepared to take instructions, it is said that saintly person should not address him. Although sometimes, because of great kindness, a saintly person speaks to ordinary men. As for Prahlad Maharaja, however, since he was not a common ordinary man, whatever question he posed would have to be answered even by a great and exalted personality. Therefore, the saintly person, saintly Brahmana, did not remain silent, but began to answer. These answers, however, were not concocted by him. This is indicated by the words Yatha Srutam, meaning as I have heard from the authorities. In the parampara system, when the questions are bona fide, the answers are also bona fide. No one should attempt to create or manufacture answers. One must refer to the Shastra and give answers according to the Vedic understanding. The word Yatha Shrutam refers to Vedic knowledge. The Vedas are known as Shruti because this knowledge is received from authorities. The statements of the Vedas are known as Shruti Pramana. One should quote evidence from the Shruti, the Vedas, or Vedic literature, and then one's statement will be correct. Otherwise, one's words will proceed from empty assumption.
Any points then? So an advanced devotee, as we already said, he doesn't like to associate with materialistic people. But in order to spread Krishna consciousness to them, he will go and associate with them. And Prabhupada says that whatever we speak, it must be backed by authority. So whenever you give class, you should quote Sanskrit. If you're making a point, there should be a reference to what you're saying. That's the point. That is the checking point. Guru, Sadhu, Shastra. So if you're giving class, it must be represented by Shastra, verified by Shastra, it must be verified by Guru. Otherwise, do not say it, unless it can be proven. Okay.